What's up, Energy fam? Welcome back to another episode of Wicked Energy with JG, the place where energy, economics, and innovation converge. I'm your host, Justin Gauthier, coming to you live from the vibrant city of Houston, Texas. As someone who spent years immersed in the oilfield service sector and focusing on energy economics and drilling operations, each week we dive into the heart of the energy sector, exploring its trends, challenges, and the future of energy in our lives. But today, I'm reaching out to you, my valued listeners, with a special opportunity. Wicked Energy is looking for partners who share a passion for energy, innovation, and impact. We're on the hunt for sponsors who want to connect with a dedicated audience of energy enthusiasts, professionals, and those keen on understanding the complex world of energy economics. By sponsoring, you'll not only support our mission to be the voice of energy, but also gain access to a platform where your brand can shine. Whether you are in the energy sector, finance, technology, or any field that resonates with the energy and innovation space, we believe your message deserves to be heard. If you're interested in exploring this opportunity and aligning your brand with a podcast that's all about making an impact, I'd love to start the conversation. Reach out to me at the link below or hit me up on LinkedIn. Together, we can fuel conversations that matter and leave a legacy that resonates for our listeners and beyond. Thank you for tuning in. Now, let's jump into the show. Oh. Awesome. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Wicked Energy with JG. I'm here with Miranda Palmisano, CEO of MadXR. Miranda, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. How's everything in your world today?
Thanks for having me, Justin. Everything's going really well. It's a beautiful day in Houston, so just enjoying the weather.
That's a huge topic of discussion, right? It's like we went from 1,000-degree weather for months, and now we had this cold snap. So, I mean, are you loving the cold weather? Are you waiting for warm weather? Like, what's your stance on it? Because I feel like
I'm for the cold. I love the cold weather. So anytime we have a cold front come through, I'm ready for it.
I bet. So are you from Houston area?
So my parents kind of moved around a lot. My dad was an entrepreneur, but he moved around a lot. So growing up, I grew up in Chicago, so I'm used to the cold weather from there. But then when I was 12, we moved to Louisiana. So I say I'm from Louisiana because I grew up there most of my childhood.
Yeah, because I noticed on LinkedIn you went to LSU. Is that correct?
Of course. Go Tigers. Yeah.
Right? Okay. So I'm curious. You said your dad was an entrepreneur. What kind of stuff was he into?
Yeah, he was into, so he worked in the medical industry in IT for many years. He had this idea that at the time his leadership team turned down. So he kind of ventured out with a few buddies and they formed their own medical dictation and transcription company.
What? Okay. Yeah. So now the dots are connecting because I was like, LSU grad working for a major for several years and then all of a sudden does like a startup in the, I don't know if you, would you consider it IT or is it more like?
Yeah, I would consider IT, tech industry. Okay.
Right. Going from Chevron, which you did some tech stuff at Chevron, which I'm curious about at a high level. But so LSU, so are you a huge, I'm assuming you're a huge LSU sports fan, just like everyone who went there. Is that correct?
I am a bandwagon fan. I am proud of it. So when they're doing well, I will cheer them on. But for the most part, no, I just enjoyed going to the games. It was a great school. Had a lot of fun. Yeah.
Nice. No, my, we have some, so my wife's family is all from Louisiana.
And
oddly, none of them went to LSU, but a lot went to like school in Lafayette and Louisiana. There's definitely some there, but they don't have any roots to LSU. But again, to your point, like they all cheer for them and it's a big deal. But Baton Rouge, do you miss Baton Rouge at all?
Not really. I enjoyed it from a college perspective, like staying there, but I really like Houston. I like, it's just a larger city. There's more to do.
Gotcha.
So I enjoy it here too.
Fascinating. Chicago, do you ever see the North being back in the sort of the deck of cards for you? Or do you like being in the South?
I like all of it. If I could live in an RV and just like travel the country full time, really? I would totally do that. Yeah, for sure. Getting to experience a new place every other week. I would love to do that. But no, I would totally travel up north and live there again if I could. Yeah.
So funny, my wife's friends, or I guess there are friends, but his name is Drew, and him and his wife and his family, I think, are originally from Michigan. And they actually ended up getting an RV. To your point, they sold their house. And for like the last 2 years, they've been living on the road at like every corner of the United States. And so Drew's wife, and I forget her name, but she's homeschooling the kids. They got a dog. And
good for them.
It is like the funniest thing. I couldn't do that, but when you said that, I was like, okay, you're one of the only other people that I've heard would say do that. You said
it's
you have
a
dog.
Dream.
So, yeah.
I do. Yeah, he's walking around here somewhere. I have a golden retriever, so, and he
Okay.
loves the car, so it would totally work out.
I mean, Miranda, you need to take Mad XR on the road. Maybe like wrap your RV with Mad XR stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's like you're on a road show.
Right, a tour bus.
Yeah, that is
Love
so
it.
funny. Oh my goodness. Well, no, that's cool. It's good to get to know a little bit about you. I'm super curious. Like, was like going to school at LSU obviously is like, I would say is pretty predominantly known for petroleum engineering, but you got out and you got onto the tech side for, did you come out of school and work for Chevron right away?
I did. So I graduated from LSU, had an internship during my senior year with Chevron.
Yeah.
At that time, I had internship opportunities across a few of the different majors. And I had the opportunity to speak to my friends who I was living with. Their parents had all worked for Exxon, Chevron, Shell.
Yeah.
So I kind of got the lay of the land from them. Ultimately chose to do an internship at Chevron. I loved it. I always equated it to Disney World. I thought it was just the best experience ever.
No way. What?
Yeah, it was so much fun. They had so many events for us. Even though my project wasn't super exciting, it was like a SharePoint migration at the time, they still gave us the opportunity to create our own experiences and our own projects if we saw opportunity. So
Really?
it was just a really, really, really well done internship program.
That is super cool. I would imagine,
Yeah.
like, and that was, I mean, obviously several years ago, but I feel like
Yeah.
employers have done a great job of like making an experience for, especially whether it be interns or employees that are coming out of school, because we have a hard enough time attracting talent in oil and gas as it is. So
Yeah.
you have to really create a great experience. And that's something like we try and do with the company that I work at, AES Drilling Fluids. We've had interns come for several years now. And every year you can tell there's really effort put into making, not just come for a couple of months and do a project and it's done. It's like, get them out, do some road trips, get them out and see, you know, rigs. And then
Yeah.
also too, we have, you know, there's days where they'll go out and like do team building. And so, yeah, it makes the experience and hopefully they want to come back and actually work full time if they enjoy it. And obviously if they're good, but no, it's I was actually visiting with a friend of mine at Hess this morning. And
Oh, okay.
obviously with the Chevron Hess thing, he's,
Yeah.
especially what happened after the Noble acquisition, he's like paranoid that like, you know, worst case scenario, a bunch of people are losing their jobs. So
No.
Yeah, hopefully not. I'm pretty optimistic for him. He's done a great job over there. But the M&A stuff has been crazy. And so, but yeah, so I'm curious. And for the folks listening, you heard Matt XR. And now, obviously, a lot of people have heard of like VR, AR, but XR is something that's kind of unique and not one that I was familiar. So I had to do a little bit of Googling. But can you share for the audience what XR means and how you would describe that?
Yeah, XR stands for extended reality. And it's basically an umbrella term that's used to describe augmented, mixed, and virtual reality. So if you think of augmented reality, I always use the example, if you think back to 2016, where there's a bunch of kids and adults running around with their smartphones and collecting Pokemon.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a great example of augmented reality, or even like Snapchat and those filters. You're able
Right.
to see a digital overlay on top of the real world. Mixed
Got
reality is kind of a blend between the two, where you're able to see an overlay of a digital object on top of the real world, but you're able to interact with it. And then virtual reality is you usually have a headset display on and you are completely immersed. So everything
Right.
you see around you is completely digital. The possibilities are completely endless.
Right. And that's the one where you see on Instagram or TikTok where people are like falling into chairs and coffee tables and TVs.
Yes.
They really think they are where they are in the
yeah.
world.
Yeah. Punching holes in walls. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. That's crazy. I've never had like a true virtual reality headset. I would imagine.
Oh, you need to try it.
I know. So actually, I don't know if you're here in Houston, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So are you familiar with Andretti's on I-10? That's heading towards San Antonio. Anyway, it's in Katy. It's this big. It's like Main Event. It's like Chuck E. Cheese on steroids, but it has go-karting and all this stuff. Anyway, kids love it. I went there with some coworkers one day and we did virtual reality. Okay, so I digress. I have done virtual reality, but it was at one of those things.
and it was the only time, but I got so dizzy. I had to take it off. I was nauseous for like 2 hours after that. It was,
it can mess with you sometimes, especially if you're doing like the roller coaster experiences or, you know, like not, it can definitely mess with you.
Yeah, it was odd. And like, cause it was like race car driving. And at first it was so much fun, but then I felt like I was on a, like a merry-go-round the whole time. It was,
yeah,
I loved it, but I hated that my body reacted that way because I wanted to keep going. And I like told my buddies, I gotta take this thing off. Like, I'm about to puke all over this set because I can't
handle it. Especially your first time in there, you want to make sure you limit it to probably 15 minutes. I know my first experience, my parents actually own an escape room and they expanded it to have virtual reality escape games. So my first time trying virtual reality was a few years ago when they opened up this center. And I remember putting the headset on. And it was an Alice in Wonderland game. And I was so into it. It was so cool. The graphics were amazing. It really felt like I was there. I took the headset off and I wasn't dizzy or anything, but I was disoriented from the mindset of for the next few hours, I was so confused because I felt like it was real. Like I felt like I was actually in that world. So it definitely can play tricks on your mind a little bit, depending on the realism and what you're going through.
Oh my God, kid, like we need to stick on this topic. Your dad or your parents opened an escape room that now has virtual reality escape room?
Yeah, so they own, they own a franchise called Escapeology. So they have one in Covington, Louisiana, and then they had a few in Ohio and then in Austin, which they've now sold, but they expanded it to virtual reality. So now you can go in there, put on a headset with your friends, join, you know, whatever session, like you can climb pyramids and look for treasure and all this stuff and go through an escape game.
What?
Yeah.
I have no idea. That would be, see, I think I can handle that because I don't do good on like roller or like rides at like carnivals or parks and stuff that do circular stuff. So like I can, this like the car racing one, I think similar, but I think if I was to be like walking around, I think that would be a lot better. But anyway, that's cool. I had no idea.
Yeah. Give it a try.
Is there one in Houston?
I actually don't know. I'm sure there are. I've not been to one in Houston, but I'm sure it's, you know, it's a big enough city where I'm sure there's a few.
Oh, crazy. Okay. Sorry. I know the listeners are like, why are we talking about escape rooms?
No.
But this all ties together. I promise you. We're getting there. So let's dive back into your work history. You worked at Chevron. You had a pretty good extensive time there with the upstream IT and XR immersive technologies, which I didn't even know existed over at Chevron, but did that kind of help influence the creation and direction of Mad XR? Can you talk a little bit about sort of the origin story and what kind of spurred you?
Yeah, no, 100%. So yeah, I was at Chevron for 10 years, literally hit my 10-year anniversary this year. And I loved it. Like I have nothing negative to say about the company. I know people who leave companies, usually they're a little bit disgruntled or they have issues with it, but it was a great company, great people, loved the projects. When I formed the XR team at Chevron, I had a different experience where I was working externally. I was working with a bunch of startups, a bunch of different vendors. So it was very new because I wasn't used to that. Within Chevron, you know, usually we have our own internal IT organization, and there's certain people who get to work external, but that's basically it. But I would say the origin story for Mad XR really came about when, after having these conversations with these vendors, we would go back and talk to them about having, let's just say, a VR training module created, and they would say, oh, okay, it's going to be $250,000. It was so expensive. And even though we're oil and gas IT, right? We don't have those large upstream budgets that most people do have within the oil and gas sector. So being quoted at $250,000 for a 15-minute VR training module just wasn't scalable. It wasn't something that we could do. So Mad XR really was formed last year, but we didn't start working on it until earlier this year in May. After I had left Chevron, and I really just took all those lessons learned that I had gleaned from my time at Chevron and working with those vendors and kind of put together my Frankenstein model, if you will, of what I wanted our company to look like. I wanted to have affordable extended reality content that people could really update and reuse over and over again in the future.
Yeah. So real quick, back to Chevron, what were their initiatives with extended reality? Like what were their goals and vision with that? Like what was it for?
Yeah, so extended reality team, it was created. So first I was the connected worker product manager. During that time, we're working with people hand in hand in the field. We're deploying out tablets, things like that. And during that time, I kept getting the question, hey, why aren't we doing virtual reality? And so after getting this probably the eighth time from a different business unit, really started to uncover like what they're looking for, why they think it's valuable, what other people are doing across the industry.
Okay.
We put together a proposal, and very, very shortly thereafter, the XR team was funded and born, really.
Wow.
Our mission was just to transform the way that we were learning, collaborating, operating through these types of technologies. So it wasn't just focused on VR training. We had collaboration. We had a bunch of different facets that were involved too. But really it was born from operators and people in the field telling us, hey, Marathon or whoever is doing that down the street, why aren't we doing this to better train our people?
Of course. No, the training aspect's fascinating. We currently have an initiative here. We're a lot smaller than Chevron, so things oftentimes get shelved, which can happen to large companies. But anyway, we've had an ongoing initiative to do lab tours in virtual reality. So we have a very beautiful lab here in Houston, and it's not easy to a lot of times get drilling engineers or folks to come and tour the lab, because it's kind of like, oh yeah, I've seen a lab. But we've been filming and doing things to where if we were to go to a customer's office and they were to put on a headset or glasses, be like, hey, can I give you a quick tour of the lab? And then we both like walk through it and show them what we're doing. And so like from that perspective, I find like that would be really interesting. So for training, I think makes sense, but there's so much, like after looking into it, there's so much more. And so I'm curious on like on a very high level, Miranda, how do you see the role of things like XR actually transforming traditional industries, say like oil and gas, who are typically somewhat like not necessarily risk adverse to something like that, but just are very slow to adopt because it's like, well, where's the ROI and is that going to help us produce barrels? You know what I mean? So can you kind of speak on how it may transform the industry?
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be completely transformative. If we think about the workforce today in these types of sectors like oil and gas, we have a lot of people who have, you know, 30 to 40 years of knowledge that are now leaving and retiring. So there's a gap in our workforce, but there's also very, very high turnover. These newer generations, they're not sticking at a company for 30 to 40 years anymore. They're leaving after 3 to 5 because they know that they can go get a higher salary somewhere else if they pop around. So I think the combination of those two really opens the doors for we need better ways to train our workforce. That's where the training comes in.
Yeah.
But to your point, Justin, there's so many other facets of extended reality of how to make our workforce and make our daily jobs more efficient. So even doing like a design review, for example, we saw great benefits of this across Chevron, where instead of flying 50 people in to conduct a design review, let's all put on a headset or let's all jump into an immersive session via desktop and walk around this, you know, model before it's even constructed and do that design review, look for clashes before it's even gone through the construction process. So there's a lot of different things. It's not just with operations. It's not just with training. There's a lot of different avenues and opportunities that we have in front of us for oil and gas and other industries too.
Yeah, no, I could see that. Like, and to your point, there's a lot of benefits from not having to have people travel for like maybe a couple hours to go to a certain site.
Right.
So not only are you, I mean, you're saving time, you're saving company dollars by way of travel. There's an ESG component there as well. Safety, you know, emissions from travel, you know, just associated with that. So that to me makes sense. And again, the amount of time saved instead of having to travel for a day to go somewhere is, you can knock it out at your desk. And you know, there's nothing, I think there's part of that is like, you can never take away the human experience by collaborating in person, but it's like a tool in the toolbox, right?
Exactly.
Like, you don't always have to fly a bunch of people to a certain site or, you know, whatever to do some of this stuff. I'm curious, have you had any challenges or what type of challenges have you encountered in creating sort of custom XR solutions tailored to different sectors? Because I know looking at your site and what you offer sort of different ranges of services and even sort of custom tailored. So how is it pretty tough or is there kind of a template and you build off it? Like, how does that work?
So I think going back to the question about what I learned at Chevron, why I started Mad XR, I had all these lessons learned from my experience at Chevron. So when I formed Maddox, I kind of knew the process and the people that I needed to put in place in order to quickly crank out, you know, a virtual reality training module or a tour, for example. So the way that we operate, there's always going to be challenges, right? So onboarding people and making sure that they're familiar with the SDK and the tools that we're using, that's always something that you want to make sure you have the right training modules and things in place to actually upskill those workers. But I think from a challenging perspective, the hardware is getting better and better. And we've seen that with the release of the Quest 3 that just came out. But having an untethered experience, that is something that I feel like is very paramount in order to have people in these giant companies be able to scale this technology. Because taking a headset and having it tethered to, you know, a gaming laptop and having to spend, you know, $8,000 or $5,000 to $8,000 on just one setup, it's too expensive. You can't scale that. So that is one challenge that we're always working within, is the constraints of the hardware.
Gotcha. And so for when you come in and say work for a company, are they then forced to have to buy a lot of the hardware and you just provide a service? Or is it more like, are you like a turnkey type solution?
No, yeah, they have to buy their own hardware. So usually we'll work with people who are going through pilots or they are ready to scale. So they'll usually have the hardware already in place. And that's the easy part. Getting the hardware is easy. It's really deploying it at mass scale. So for people who have never been through VR before, it usually takes about 15 to 30 minutes as a learning curve to get familiar and feel comfortable. And so I think that's something that we have to be on the lookout for. But yeah, our team, what we do is we partner with the companies, build out the storyboards of what they're looking to build. And then we have a development team who actually goes in, codes everything, and then we deploy it to the customer.
Gotcha. So when talking to a new customer, how do you typically articulate the value to ensure there's a good return, right? Because although it's easy to look at and say, yeah, this is actually really beneficial. But a lot of times, I mean, even for us, we were hesitant to jump down there because it's like, well, there's other reasons. You know, we could allocate our resources to things that are, you know, perhaps more important, if you will. I mean, how do you kind of get past those objections?
No, I think it's always really good to have an ROI in place, understand what your objectives are. But I think it depends on your use case. If you're sitting there trying to reduce the number of incidents at one facility, you need to understand where those incidents coming from. So is it coming from your lockout tagout procedures? And if that's the case, then you probably want to create a module around lockout tagout. But with that, you're trying to figure out what are those metrics that you want to have in place. And so from an ROI perspective, it might be, hey, we're going to gain this much value because we're not going to have our equipment down for as long. And maybe it's going up by 10%. It's the time it takes to train people. Maybe it's taking 5 weeks currently, and we want to reduce that time to 4 weeks. So there's a bunch of different factors that you can kind of look at from an ROI perspective.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You totally just expanded my thoughts around that. That totally makes sense. Do you have any cool cases that you'd be willing to share that someone maybe was hesitant or a company was looking at it and they did sort of capture the value and we're like, wow, this was actually pretty cool? Do you have anything that you can share?
Most of what we've had, I'll be honest, most of we can't share because it's based on their personal data of incidents usually.
Gotcha.
But I can just say that from an oil and gas perspective, usually it's in the very high, it's tens of millions of dollars. It's very, very high ROIs.
Yeah. Okay. And sorry, I should have reframed my question, not necessarily on the dollar value, but like just the mechanics behind it, like more so like how there was value, like they were doing this, but then they used us or XR and now they're doing this. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah. We've seen a company, for example, they went through and they had a baseline of how long it took to have an operator go through a certain training, for example.
Okay.
And so from there, they had their baseline and then they ran in parallel a VR training program in place. And so they're able to compare the two and saying, okay, it took 5 hours this first time, but then when they went through the VR training, it took 3 hours. So they're able to kind of put that metric in place. And you don't do it for every single one, but it does give you a good baseline. If that is your metric that you're trying to do is to reduce the time it takes to train people, then having, you know, your controlled variable of, you know, going through the regular program versus your VR training too.
Okay. No, again, that was exactly what I was looking for. Like this, and again, even without me, someone could do the back of the envelope math and realize like there's some serious potential there, which is super cool. So how, I mean, do you have a large team that works on this, or is this sort of a, is this style of business that you can run super lean and it's more tech related, or do you need a lot of people sort of running the operations?
No, I think we're pretty lean at this point. So we have about 10 people. We've scaled up, we've scaled down just based on business need, but right now we're around 10 people in that team. I have business analysts, I have 3D artists, and I have developers. And yeah, as CEO, you know, it's really funny within a startup, you kind of just wear multiple hats. So right now I'm doing sales, I'm doing marketing. You just kind of learn to be flexible and kind of jump in where there's a need.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an interesting point to stick on. Like kind of pivoting away from like what MatXR is doing, but like on the startup side of things, I mean, you went from working at a company, you know, that had a ton of resources, you had a team, you probably could depend on a lot of different people for a lot of different things. I mean, talk about the entrepreneur life. Like, is it all what it's cracked up to be? Or were you like, oh my God, I can't believe I did this. Like, can you talk a little bit about your journey in the entrepreneur space?
Yeah, no, I will say, I've always been like a hard worker. So I wasn't afraid of the long hours that I have to put in because I knew that was coming. Mm-hmm. I am shocked by just how much you have to learn. I know that sounds kind of stupid, but you have to learn how to do sales. You have to learn how to do marketing. You have to learn how to do finances. It's not just like, oh, you get to direct a team and then call it a day. Like, you are fully invested. It's your money on the line. It's your time on the line. And so there's a lot of upside to it, but there's also times where you're like, oh my gosh, I have to learn how to do this or else we're not going to be able to move forward. Like, you are the blocker and the person that has to move things forward. So.
Yeah.
It's been an awesome journey. And I think growing up also with my parents being entrepreneurs, I kind of had firsthand sight into kind of what that journey would look like. But yeah, just a lot of learning experiences and we're having a lot of fun.
I bet. That's good. I love to hear that you're saying it's fun. Cause I'm in the corporate world and I guess I've got some entrepreneurial tendencies, but I've never like quit everything and put everything on the line to start a company. Yeah. Although my wife basically has, she was in the corporate world for a long time, business, finance, accounting, and then now she has her own company. And yeah, it's like she has fun some days, but then some days she's like, I feel like I'm working for free. No one appreciates me. Like, life is just like, you know, coming to an end. But like the ebbs and flows, right? And there's like the highs are high and the lows are like pulling my hair out low. So
yeah,
I commend you for doing it. It's not easy. And again, like, the entrepreneurial space has been sort of glorified over the years. But you know, to do it, live through it, work through it. And yeah, I'm sure there's days where you're like, why did I do this again? But no, it's cool to see forging ahead in a very unique and niche industry, because it's like the demand I'm sure is there, but it's not like it's a bit of a different tech space. Although if there's not many out there, then hopefully you can capture a bunch of the market and kind of be the one, which, you know, kind of goes back to building the right team. How have you identified certain individuals? It's like, you don't have like 6 months, like, let's just hire someone and see if they work out. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure you're like every day you're like, okay, we're paying this person how much per hour and are they bringing value and do we really need them? And oh my goodness. Can you talk a little bit about that piece? Because I think that as a CEO is very like hiring, firing, and promoting is like pretty tough, I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh, I hate this topic, Justin, because I agree. It's a very, very tough topic. But to your point, when it's your money on the line and people aren't performing, it's very easy to see in a startup versus a very large corporation. You can't hide behind anybody, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's the worst part, I think, about being a CEO is having to fire people. And I've had to do it before. If people aren't performing, because you can very clearly see how they are performing against their peers.
Right.
So obviously you want to give them feedback. You have to be upfront about it and give them that feedback of, hey, you need to perform better. Here's where you're falling short. Working with them, giving them the opportunity to improve. But I think after, you know, a few months, if they're not starting to deliver the results that you're paying them for, then we do need to have those harsh conversations and we do need to let people go. I don't think we do that enough in the corporate world. We get put them on PIPs or performance improvement plans for 3 years. And then we put more work on other people who are doing well versus kind of having those difficult conversations.
That's a very interesting point, especially the bigger you get, the easier it is to hide.
Yeah.
Which can be a problem too, because a lot of times if you are performing, maybe it's not being it's not being recognized perhaps maybe as well either. So there's kind of a downside to it to some degree. But like, have you gotten better at dealing with people? Like, I'm sure, like, you seem like a very, like, friendly person. You're kind. Like, you don't seem like you're cutthroat business. Like, don't give a crap about anybody's feelings. Have you gotten better? Or is it still just like every time you're dealing with that type of situation, it's just as hard? Or does it get easier?
It doesn't get easier. I don't think it gets easier. I will tell you a little, I can't go into the details, but I did have a very, very large contract signed early on in the formation of Mad XR. And with that, I, you know, had to hire out a ton of people, one of which was my sister. And so all these and sisters and, you know, I had friends too, who left their companies to come join Mad XR. And so I think that was the roughest part of my journey, is when that contract came to a screaming halt, I had to let people go, that not only people that I didn't know, but people that literally risked their comfort of their previous jobs to join Mad XR, and had to let them go.
Oh, no.
That was really, really hard.
So you had to run your sister off?
I did. Yeah, she's still kind of bitter about that.
If she's listening.
She probably is. But no, she's doing much better now. But I mean, you have to do what you have to do, right? If you can't afford people, you have to let them go sometimes. So,
yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, business is business, right? And, yeah. And then hopefully there's like a mutual understanding when you go into it. It's like, there's a possibility that we're going to butt heads. And even worse, like I might have to run you off or say let you go, and so hopefully it's like getting better. But I could just imagine like every holiday dinner or like any family event, like in the back of your mind you're like, yeah, I was your boss and I had to let you go. You know, like I could just
think she did nothing wrong, but yeah, I mean it happens, but she knew the risk going into it.
Hey, anyone who even dabbles in the startup world, like every second could be something devastating, or it could be the best thing in the world. So it's,
yeah,
you know, enter at your own risk.
Exactly what you said before. There's very, very high highs and very low lows. I think another comment with the startup world is I didn't realize the stress that I would feel. So constantly, like, the business is always on your mind, right? Of how you can improve it, what you can do better, you know, what's working well, what's not working well. And so that's something that constantly is on my mind.
That's another interesting topic, Miranda, is stress and how people deal with it and how they respond. Can you share some ways that you felt that has helped? I mean, there's a lot of startup folks that listen to this. And so, like, what have you done, or do you have any advice for folks that, like, maybe dealing with this type of stress in the startup world or just any stress in general?
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, it was such a new environment for myself, even though I had my parents who were supporting me because they've been entrepreneurs before. I think finding that community of people who have the same, they're going through the same things, right? They have their own startup. They're going through the same types of things is really important. So I had a good friend, Tommy, who introduced me to the Ion in Houston.
Yeah.
And so I think attending events there, building out that network of people really helps from a mental health standpoint. Because sometimes it can feel kind of lonely, right? You don't have thousands of people in your network that you can constantly talk to every single day. So I think having that community really helps from that perspective. And then just working out.
Yeah.
Getting all the rage out through workouts.
Okay. Well, share. What kind of workout or style do you typically do?
I do strength training. So I follow an app on my smartphone called Sweat. Been doing it for years. Yeah. I just enjoy it. It's like a go at your own pace kind of program. And lifting weights is the way to go.
Nice. Well, you and I share that in common, because that's one of the things I mean, grew up playing sports and I've strength trained my entire life since I was 16, basically, and really haven't taken probably more than like a week off. And that's maybe because
good for you.
Yeah. But again, it started off because of like body image issues, but now it's more for my mental health than anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to your point, I think there's a huge benefit to it. Now, are you a workout in the morning type lady? Are you afternoon or just whenever you can get it in?
4:45, Justin, in the morning, I get up.
Nice. So
me and my husband, we get up 4:45 and we head over to Lifetime Fitness to go work out. And now we just recently started playing pickleball, which I know is totally random, but if you haven't played it before, it is worth the hype. It is so much fun.
So, okay, because there's been a lot of hype around it.
And,
and it's, I always see memes all the time about like old people doing it, but like, so we have some property kind of close to East Downtown, and we went to the East River Project, and they had like all these courts with pickleball, and it was like a party slash tournament slash people were loving it. And I have not played it, but I have heard and seen so many things about it. So that's really neat. And so like, is that something you guys do weekly, or like how often do you guys play?
Yeah, I would say probably weekly. We're like completely new beginners. We literally just picked this up maybe a month ago. Yeah. But still, it's fun. I mean, you have a partner next to you, and if I get tired, I just let him run and get the ball, my husband. But yeah, at the same time, like, it's just a fun competitive thing to do on the side. A little bit easier than tennis because the court's a lot smaller, but
tennis
a lot
is
of fun.
Hard. Yeah, it is. When the pandemic hit, my boss and another guy that we work with, we all live very close to each other, and he started picking up tennis. And so he was like, you guys should come play. And of course, when your boss is like, yeah, you should come play tennis with me, it's like, yeah, I'm going to come play tennis with you. And it was so hard. I feel like I'm an athlete. I'll be able to figure it out. I couldn't hit the dang court for the life of me for like weeks. And then finally I kind of got the hang of it, but like, yeah. So if pickleball is easier, then that might be something I can jump into and actually do well somewhat early in the stage. But no, that's kind of going back to it. I think finding an outlet, and whether that's working out, pickleball, whether it's yoga, I mean, anything to just kind of like get yourself out of it and be focused on the mind and the body, I think is extremely important. Like, again, if you're healthy in the mind, healthy in the body, healthy in the spirit, that can help cope with lots of different things that come at us every single day. So, and then the early morning thing too, I used to work out at 5 till 6 every morning. Then I had kids, or then we had kids. And then now I have to bump because getting to bed is tough sometimes because of kids, but nonetheless, now it's more of a 6 o'clock thing. But if I don't get a workout in the morning, it definitely can throw the trajectory of my day off. So I totally understand where you're coming from on that. So I'm going to pivot back to Maddox, because there's a couple things I was curious about, and we went on a tangent about some other things, which is totally cool. That's what we do here at Wicked Energy. You know, it's just kind of go with the flow. So again, going back to Maddox, you guys offer a range of different services, from like ready to go VR training to custom XR content, I believe. What's the process that you typically go through with clients to determine the most effective solution? Is there sort of like a step-by-step process? Or is there like evaluation period? Like, kind of help describe that.
Yeah, it's really just based on kind of what are they trying to do. I don't think we should take current state processes and just throw it into VR. I know VR is flashy and exciting, but I don't think that it's the end-all be-all for everything. But it's a great modality for certain use cases. And so I think exploring that first use case, I think they can tell, you know, pretty much straight away from our off-the-shelf solutions if that's, you know, one of their use cases that they're trying to tackle. Right now, all of our pre-built modules, they are based on IOGP, which is the International Oil and Gas Producers Organization for life-saving actions. So things like energy isolation, confined space entry, lifting and rigging, those types of modules. But if you have a very specific use case or a very specific procedure, then we'll work with you guys on storyboarding what that looks like, what your objectives are, because you always want to tie it back to learning objectives and metrics and things like that too. So we work with you to kind of detail all of that out before even starting the development work.
Gotcha. So there's a good system and like sort of strategy in place to make sure, because like you said, I like what you said about, you don't just take current processes and just throw VR on top of it.
Right.
It's like you kind of have to change the mindset and approach and almost kind of flip it over and sort of start from scratch in a sense, I would imagine, with hopefully equal or way better outcome. The one component that I can appreciate, and I was a rig hand for years, and things like confined space, you know, working at heights, things like that. Can you elaborate a little bit on like safety training modules that you provide? I noticed there was energy isolation, confined entry, a few others. I think that part of it is also extremely important to mention.
Yeah. So we wanted to go with, I guess, somewhat generic modules. So we looked at the IOGP and just their life-saving actions and kind of their advice and guidance that they're providing out to a larger population. And so kind of framing it around those objectives, that's where we started with these pre-built modules. So if you think about things like energy isolation, you're going through and you're isolating an electric pump. It's not just the formality of, oh, I'm putting a tag and I'm putting a lock on. It's helping them understand the consequences of their actions. And so if they're going through the procedure and they forget to you know, they turn the discharge valve and turn everything off, but they forget to turn or close the suction valve, there's certain consequences. So we want to show them, hey, your pump's going to start smoking, or your seal's going to start leaking. So we go through that, and we actually show them that in VR as well. For working from heights, I know you mentioned that one, for working from heights, when they have to go through and inspect their equipment, we're helping teach them what to actually look out for, so that when they do get into the real world and they're putting on their harness, they know, okay, if it's worn or there's a tear, if there's something wrong with it, that you shouldn't be wearing that. You should put that aside and go have that one fixed and put on a brand new harness to start the actual work. Okay. So we do go through and help people understand that when you do something in VR, if you do it incorrectly, there's going to be consequences to your actions. You're going to start to feel that and have that memory retention when you go out into the real world.
Yeah. And do you find it like hard to mimic? Like, are there any sort of like feedbacks or reviews about like, yeah, the VR is good, but it just doesn't feel real enough to where I'm actually learning something? Like, is that a thing?
I haven't heard it directly from customers or even people at Chevron. I have heard, or I have seen with, you know, my own eyes, other modules that are on the market today where I've gone through it, maybe just point and click, and it's just, you're pointing at something and it's doing that automation for you, but it's not really teaching you about what you're seeing.
Yeah.
I think that you need to have an instructional design built in where you're actually teaching people about what they're going through versus just the mechanics of the action itself.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think in my mind, that was like a piece I was missing, but it sounds like that's something that is a challenge that's been addressed, and not by everybody, but obviously someone who's leading in the space has thought about it and understands, because again, it's like getting out from under like the real life thing to then doing it on like a screen, and you're there, but you're not really there. I could see like you kind of have to change your mindset and be open-minded enough where I'm sure it's going to continue to evolve and get better, but it's, I don't like, are we almost perfect? Are we far from perfect? Like, what inning do you think we're in terms of like your vision of like what this ultimately could be?
I think it's super far away. We've definitely, the barrier to entry for extended reality has gotten extremely low because we're able to use our smartphones to do mobile AR. We're able to use, you know, we're able to go buy a $300 headset off the shelf from Amazon and quickly jump into virtual reality. So the barrier to entry is much, much lower than it used to be, but I still think we have tons of, you know, innings ahead of us. I think, I don't want to say the word, but I'm going to say it, metaverse. That was a huge hype word, right? A few years ago. And I think people would jump into their headset, jump into alt space and be like, oh, we're in the metaverse. That's not the metaverse. I see the metaverse as being kind of that end state or that end goal where you have these communities and these things brought together. You have replicas or digital twins of your real world with operational data and things brought into these spaces as well. So I definitely think we're ways out.
Gotcha.
But the low-hanging fruit and that value of what we're getting today is still super valuable. It's just not, I don't think it's the end state.
Yeah. No, and I think it's just like anything, right? Things change, they evolve, they get better. You start integrating other technologies into, the, you know, perhaps yours. You sort of bolt on to make everything better. So I'm curious, are there any emerging technologies or trends that you think will significantly impact or improve XR?
Oh gosh, I think a lot of it works together. So AI, huge thing going on right now.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence, we have digital twins, but I think all these different technologies, sometimes they're worked in silos. Like I know at Chevron, we had a team for a digital twin. We had a team for machine learning. We had a team for XR. And I think over time, we're going to start to see the convergence happening where these things need to work together or else you're going to be updating individual things that don't, you know, they're not going to add significant value.
Right. Well, and you say we work in silos. I play in the drilling world and I have my whole career, and talk about silos. You're drilling a well and this company drilling that well is its own little business. And we rarely talk to each other, but yet we're all trying to get to within like one inch, 20,000 feet away. You know what I mean? Like we're all working towards the same goal, but yet we all work in such silos. There's some really cool technology out there trying to like, you know, converge all of the data and everything to be a sort of a hub, which is again, a whole nother topic of discussion. But when you say that, it's like, okay, like it's a very apparent that that's not just in this world that I live in, but like in every case, because again, there's so many companies working for a company that's trying to accomplish. So whether it's drill a well or complete or produce, it's fascinating. Are you looking to, like, are you primarily working in oil and gas, or are you looking to expand it? Because I would imagine your stuff can apply in any industrial application.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's focused on heavy industry. So not just oil and gas, but I mean, that's my background, right? So that's an easy place for us to start. A lot of, I would say 90% of the people that we're chatting with are from oil and gas. Cool. But started to talk to people from medical and pharmaceuticals, which is really interesting. And so I think that's another avenue that we'll start to tap into fairly soon.
Hmm. So like, instead of like being somewhere on a site, maybe you've shrunk down to like a molecule to where you can run through someone's body. I don't know. Like, what does that look
that's
like?
That's one form of education for sure. And I've actually seen, I've seen videos of people jumping into applications in VR where it's doing exactly what you were saying. But yeah, even just the processes of some of these major pharmaceutical companies. And I know COVID was a huge accelerator for them getting into virtual reality for a lot of these people. But how do you distribute vaccinations? How do you even perform a vaccination? Taking it into a laboratory where they're having to do a specific procedure within that laboratory. So
I don't know what
I was surgeries thinking, like, are medical. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I was thinking like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and I'm like trying to figure out why this person has cancer. You know what I mean? But like, yeah, a little bit maybe in the future. But for now, it's like, yeah, you could, you know, train people in ER or whatever for some like super sensitive thing where, yeah, you have to train just like we would in oil and gas. Like, you have to train, you know, for a specific task. No, that's super fascinating.
Even like just not even from a virtual reality standpoint, from an augmented reality or mixed reality standpoint, where you're putting on maybe a HoloLens device and you're doing a remote assistance call with, to your point, if you're in the medical and you're having questions about surgery, which I hope you're not, but if you are, you could put that headset and communicate with somebody who has more expertise. But we saw it all the time at Chevron, where we would have an operator put the headset on, walk around and inspect something with somebody else on the call who's watching everything that they're doing to be able to help them with that procedure.
Gotcha. Yeah. One of the last things I was curious about is, you mentioned, I think on the website, talking about connected worker. Mm-hmm. Which I think is an interesting term. Can you describe what that is for folks? Because that's something I've never heard of.
Yeah. So connected worker, I feel like we've been doing connected worker for 10 plus years, but connected worker, it's basically any worker that was interacting with the field, either physically, virtually, or remotely. So over time, I think we're starting to see a trend where more and more people, it's not to say we're getting rid of those workers, but more and more people are not on the platforms anymore or not in these facilities, and they're going into these control rooms. So we're starting to see people build out unmanned facilities. And so a connected worker could be that person in the control center who's still monitoring the facility itself. But yeah, so it's your personas like operators, maintenance technicians, you name it, is kind of what we defined as the connected worker. And so our mission was, how do we make these people more efficient? How do we bring the data to them? How do we digitize their workflows and really just help these people out who have kind of been not forgotten about, but they don't really get the most attention from an IT perspective. They're still using like clipboards and paper.
Gotcha. Yeah. Which again, like, needs to go. And then we see it in my space. We still see it out on a rig. I'm like, golly, now it's getting better, but it's not there yet. So we've got some work to do. But so lastly, on the Maddox, our front, if you were to sort of paint the ideal candidate for someone looking to adopt something like this, how would you describe that? Because I think, I would imagine there's a lot of companies that need it but don't realize they need it. And they're like, wait, I do kind of check all these boxes. I really do need to look into this.
Yeah, if they're just looking for a better way that they want to teach people, if they want to be more efficient with their learning, their training, or just even just a better way of working. So it's not just all about virtual reality training, but we also offer custom experiences where, you know, going back to the point about an operator being in a facility, if they need an app that's going to show them where pump 102 is, they can use their smartphone and it can guide them to that pump. So using things like that just to make their workflows and their daily things more efficient. Especially for turnarounds when you're bringing thousands of extra people on site.
Well, yeah, no, I can imagine. So, and this would be a hard question to answer because every case is so different, but on like sort of your bread and butter application, how long would it take to implement from, say, okay, yeah, well, let's shake hands, we're good, to having someone actually using your services? Or perhaps you can kind of break, like, give an idea of like a timeline. Like, typically we have meetings and then within like a year, we're ready to go. Like, how do you explain that to someone who would probably have the same question?
So if they're looking at using our pre-built modules, which are already developed and ready to go, that's just a matter of signing a contract and then we pass it over to them. So that could, you know, that could be a day or a week. If it's a custom experience, that's when we have to go through the storyboarding, which you want to bring in all the subject matter experts that you need to be part of that. So that can take upwards of 2 weeks. The development process, usually we estimate around 6 to 9 weeks in time, and then we'll have about 2 weeks of user acceptance testing where people are getting in the headsets or getting in the experience, trying it out and giving us feedback to make those changes. Okay. So overall, I mean, you're looking at, you know, I would say 6 to 12 weeks for a custom experience to be developed.
Okay. So that's really not too bad. And do you anticipate that accelerating, or is that just the nature of it?
No, I mean, I feel like it's getting faster and faster.
Cool.
So I can tell you, when we first started our journey, even at Chevron, creating even a very short module would take, you know, upwards of 12 weeks. But our last module that we just created for Working from Heights at Maddox Art took us 5 weeks to develop. And that's with all the custom 3D artwork as well. So I do think it's getting faster and faster, especially as we create these reusable components within the, the modules itself. And so, yeah, get better and better over time.
Nice. No, that's cool. I mean, you can kind of, it's like, I don't know if economies of scale is the right word, but it's, yeah, the more you do it, the faster it's going to get.
Yeah.
Which, again, everyone wants to implement something ASAP. So that's cool that you're already seeing that time frame continue to decrease. Fascinating. Well, this has been an interesting conversation. I'm curious, have you and your team built like something not really for a customer, but like something out of your own like self-interest, like some cool world or something that you're like, you know what I mean? Have you done anything like that?
I will say, when we first formed Maddox, or before we journeyed into this, we were developing like an event world. So how do you have thousands of people come together in, you know, a virtual event space? So we've done that. We've tried to do gamified experiences where we literally have, it was a Christmas experience where you walk through a Christmas train terminal and you're playing these games and stuff. So yeah, we have fun with it too.
Okay. So one thing during the pandemic, me and a friend of mine were thinking about like how events were going to take place for the future, you know what I mean? Because at that point, we're like, is the world ever going to be back to normal? And so we had this like crazy idea, probably just like thousands of other people, but like going into say like a conference, right? And everyone has their booths. And so you're walking in with your set, or you're at home or wherever you're going in. And like, I play in drilling fluids. That's my career. And you go up to the drilling fluids booth, and you get to like jump in a water slide that's actually drilling fluids, and like go down a well bore and like slide through. And we were like joking around about like how you would create those type of experiences for different companies and what that would look like. And because again, it might even happen like that at some point, just because conferences, if you look at the attendance, like OTC, like offshore technology conference here in Houston, like, the attendance has not been great. Like, the trajectory is not awesome. And really, most people come here just for the networking, but to actually attend and like go to these like $50,000 booths, like, people really don't care that much. So you're almost, and you're starting to see, like, I forget who it was. It was Rockwell Someone last year had like a virtual reality thing, and you could use the machine underwater. I don't even know what it's called, but you could kind of play that. You were in this race car that you could do, and it was had, you know, okay, it's like each booth almost had an experience. And then some were just the typical like walk up and look at a screen. But, you know, these are some things I think eventually that are going to attract people to conferences again. Or like you said, maybe you could have a conference online and everyone's there together experiencing everything.
Yeah. Without We've having built to... conference experiences before too. So to your point, yeah, it's a great way to showcase somebody's product. It's a great marketing tool, really. But even to your point earlier in the podcast about universities, so how do you retract and recruit some of this talent? It's a great way to do that too. Of, hey, do you know if you want to be this type of, you know, person at our company? Let's throw you in this experience and give you a tour and give you an idea of what it's like.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's again, like there's so many different
There's
opportunities.
so many.
You just have to be curious enough and open-minded enough and kind of crazy enough, I guess, to think of them. 'Cause again, there's it's yeah, you can take what you're doing and just amplify it to the nth degree. Fascinating stuff, Miranda. Well, we're getting close to the hour here. We could get talking about all kinds of crazy stuff, obviously, but this has been extremely fun, very informative. Again, I think you're like right in line with this thing to take off. So I hope nothing but the best for you and your team at MadXR. I'm curious, you kind of already mentioned it, but in the startup world as an entrepreneur, CEO running a company, besides doing your daily workout or however often you do it, do you have any other daily habits or routines that contribute to your success and just staying disciplined and motivated to keep grinding your way through the
Yeah.
startup?
Oh gosh, you have to stay disciplined. I will just say writing down my to-do list every morning on a piece of paper, and that's what
Okay.
I'm focusing on because it's very easy to get distracted. It's very easy to start brainstorming new ideas of how to make things better. So it's just staying on track with here's my goals for today.
Yeah.
Helps me stay disciplined.
Yeah, it's an easy task, and
Easy. Yeah.
it's something you can do. It takes 5 minutes because you always kind of know what you need to do. I was talking to a coworker about this actually too, is because he's been just getting super slammed with work, but all for good reasons. And he's like, "Man, I've had to start writing down lists and this and that." And it's like like you said, it's easy to veer off track, and then you get doing things that really aren't. And this is a cliche type word, but staying on the critical path. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? It's easy to steer off. But yeah, so working out and task list, that's the recipe for success, folks. Well, with that said, Miranda, and I'll put the link in the show notes, but where's the best place for folks to learn more about what you're doing? Perhaps any sort of social media outlets, if not the website. Can you share where you guys are at?
Yeah, follow us on LinkedIn. It's just madxr.io. And then our website's the same thing. So www.madxr.io. You can
Perfect.
find updates on all of our services as well as our pricing information. We try to be completely transparent with people. So it's all
Cool.
available on our website and LinkedIn.
Excellent. Well, I will do that. I'll put a link in the show notes. I'll also put, if you don't mind, your personal link
Yeah,
on
please.
LinkedIn. That way people can connect with you, maybe reach out if they have any other questions. And for the folks out there, really appreciate the support. Thanks for listening. Share this with everyone or someone who you think might find this valuable, which a lot of companies should. And with that being said, let's always make sure we're approaching the energy landscape with a radically open mind. Be kind and always remember that everyone deserves access to energy, and we is greater than me. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Justin.